Accession number 10602, reel 11.
You've mentioned the duties of guarding the watertight doors, Mr. Elliot. Were there any other duties that you had to do?
Not really.
And how were you informed of those duties? Did you have some kind of a parade?
You would form up at a certain time, whatever the time was stated. I couldn't tell you, possibly. But it would be a 24-hour duty. It would be 2 hours on and 4 hours off. And that duty would last for 24 hours. That was organised by the ship's permanent military staff.
And who were these people?
They could be from any regiment or corps. They were permanently on the ship. While the ship was in the trooping season, they were on that ship permanently. That was their job. Like ours was soldiering, theirs was like Marines, really. But where the Marines had drills and things on the warships, they just had the administrative job, because the ship's officers were always the men that counted. We were the passengers, they were the gaffers.
And this door duty, were you armed for that duty?
No, no arms. Nobody had any arms. The officers may have had them in the quarters, or the ship's officers, but the other ranks, no.
And what was your job on guard there, to see that door wasn't opened or shut, or would you?
That was there, that if there was an emergency and the emergency came through, you had to seal that door irrespective of what anybody else said. There was clips which made that particular part of the ship sealed. I suppose that prevent the water from coming in. Maybe it's to keep the ship afloat. But that was the job, and once that went, once the information came through, I'm not quite sure how it came through, but the information would come through and say the watertight doors to be closed, and you closed them. You let nobody through either way until an officer came. And then the officer would say, it's only a practice, it's all right, you can open the door. But once you'd been given the order to close the doors, you close them. No hesitation.
Was there some central notice board which contained the orders or directions that you had to have?
There was orders everywhere. There would be orders, I'm pretty sure, near where the watertight doors were. But there was also a notice board area on the ship of the... I can't say exactly where, but there would be, because you'd have to look to see whether your name was on for duties or not. It would be very rare for the army not to publish names, because that covers the army in case of any incidents.
Now, outside of a given duty, the day was basically your own.
More or less. You did, as I say, a little PT, maybe on days, running around the decks, and then you would pack in, because there was nothing else you could do. There was too many people on the ship.
You mentioned that it was very crowded. What was the atmosphere like below decks as you got into the hot areas and you're sleeping there?
Oh, most of the men used to fetch the hammocks. They used to dash up and sleep on the decks up where they were allowed to. And the only time they got up was when the Lascars came on the morning to swill them down, otherwise they'd get all the gear wet from the pumps, the hoses that were on the decks. Oh, I've slept. We used to, if you had a couple of mates or one mate or something, you'd fetch them up and one would stop there while the other two went and did whatever they wanted to do, but you'd be there. And once you put the hammock down, that was your area. Nobody would take it.
And sleeping on the hard deck wasn't a hardship for you?
Not when it was so hot, no.
Was it unpleasant in the hottest areas that you were passing through?
Yes. Going through the Red Sea and the Indian Ocean, it was really hot.
Had you been warned about safeguards against the oppressive heat?
Oh, yes, you were told to keep in under shade and keep your arms and parts of your body as much as you could covered up. Most of our uniforms were cotton. Khaki cotton. That was on the ships.
So you weren't encouraged to go around bare to the waist?
Some did, but some of them paid for it. I mean, the sun was really hot.
And if you were badly sunburnt through that kind of thing, leaving your shirt off, was that an offence?
That is an offence. Any avoidable incident to your body is an offence under the Army Acts, such as VD or any other. Any VD, there was another one, scabies. Now, you would get 7 day CB without even an explanation, and I found that to be really wrong.
Why did you find it wrong?
Well, unfortunately, in 1933, I had two doses of it. And the first dose was very severe. Now, they say you can only get scabies from close contact with another human being. And I had never been in close contact with anyone. And that's fact. And I was in Fulford Hospital for a good spell. I came out, went back to Catterick, and I was returned to the hospital because I had a relapse of the old thing again. Now, that, to me, I don't know where it came from that day to this. I have no idea how or why or where it came from, but I can gamble my last halfpenny that I never had close contact with male or female. You see, at that time, we had gone to Catterick in the winter. We were snow clearing for part of the early spring and late autumn and early spring. And then in the late spring and early summer, there was fires on the moorlands. We had to go out firefighting in the heather. We barely got finished with that. We had to go to Strensor to fire an annual weapons training course. And we were under canvas, maybe in a bell tent, about 8 to 10 men in a tent. You had a palliass and blankets and no sheets. And then at night time, you were training for a Northern Command tattoo on the Knavesmire at York. So by the time you finished your weapons training course and cleaned your weapons after the firing, which you had to do, you got your tea, you were hanging about to practice torchlight parades in the dark. Because that's what it was. We were doing torchlight parades. So there was no way I was out of camp. And we moved from there to Fulford. And we're under similar conditions on the Knavesmire. We're under similar conditions there, except we went at final annual courses, and we were not allowed out of barracks until after duties. Well, after duties wasn't until after 4:30. But you couldn't go out then after 4:30 because you were still practicing the torchlight procedures. So you were finishing about 9 and 10 o'clock at night, so you were going back to bed. Now, on one of the mornings, I found out I couldn't stop scratching. Now, I went and saw the MO. He bundled me off to Fulford Military Hospital, and that's where I found out I had scabies.
And that is an offence?
That was a 7 days offence.
Evidently, in their eyes, you neglected to take...
You neglected your body. Now, where could I have neglected my body under those circumstances? Now, it may sound strange to you and me sitting here now, but not very long ago, I was listening to a programme on Radio 2, the Jimmy Young programme, I think it was, and a woman in Cornwall asked the medical expert on the programme that her daughter had got scabies, and that doctor was quite certain she could have only got scabies from close contact with another human being. Now then, the same medical bloke turned around and said, you only had colostomy surgery for two things, colitis and cancer. I had colostomy, I had neither. I had ulceration. So who's right and who's wrong? And that goes with the military. You know, you have a hard time.
Was there a medical officer on the boat?
Yes, always. Always a medical officer on the boat.
Did you get medical checkups during the course of the journey?
You got a medical when you went on. They would check you when you went on to see if there was anything wrong with you. Like as I just said. To see if there's any skin diseases or anything. To make sure that you were fit for to go abroad.
You didn't have any creams issued to you?
No.
Protect yourself against?
No, nothing. No, you never had anything like that at any time. Not even when you were in India, you didn't. You were given instructions to keep yourself covered as much as you could with the clothing you had. And when you were in India, you had mosquito nets, and it was a crime not to have them properly tucked in when you went to bed at night. At a certain time, you had to tuck them in. I just forget now, at retreat, I think it would be a retreat about 6 o'clock, or you would tuck your, to stop the mosquitoes from getting in. Because malaria was, you could get malaria fairly easy. I never got malaria in India, but I got it on the way back in Khartoum, in the Sudan.
You said you had a canteen on the boat. Did it sell alcohol?
I don't think so. It may have done, but I don't think so. They wouldn't dare, not with all the troops on. You see, they could say a ration at one per soldier per day, but you know, those rules are easy broken. I mean, I was non. I'm still teetotal. But if one of my mates had said to me, "Oi, will you not get me one?" I think I would have got him one. Not because I think he'd abuse the, but because one jar wouldn't be enough.
Were you writing home from the boat itself?
Yes, you could write home. And the first stop was, I think, Alexandria. And the post, you'd get a notice published up, or over the tannoy, whatever it was, would say, all letters to be posted, and they would be taken off the ship at the next stop. That would be Alexandria. But then the next stop was Port Said. Then there was no more stops until you got to Bombay.
Was the mail coming on that was waiting for
you
at Alexandria?
No. You got your mail when you got your unit. If there was any mail for you, you got it when you got to your unit in India or wherever you were going. I mean, that troop ship could have been going to China.
Did you get off the boat at Alexandria?
No. Not allowed up.
It's pretty cramped for a long period of time.
Aye.
And you found you coped with that pretty well?
Oh, I would get by. I think I'm easy enough to get by things like that.
What was it like, your first real vision of an area, a hot area, Egypt, the canal? What were your impressions?
I was amazed at how they got the canal dug and built. As you know, the ships only went one way, and there was areas where you passed ships halfway through or somewhere in the Bitter Lakes. I think they call them the Bitter Lakes, where the ships could pass. So where one convoy went through, the other one could go back. Oh, we were surprised at what we saw. There was a lot of sand on the sides. I can't think from, we didn't see, we passed through the Straits of Gibraltar, and I don't think we saw land till we were near in Alexandria, or at least the first stop at this side of the canal where we stopped. And then when you went into the canal, it was sand on either side, and it was like that till you got to Port Said. And then when you went through into the Red Sea, where you could see either side of Africa and Asia, it was just bare land. There was never saw any greenery. It was all, well, one side was just as bad as the other, let's put it that way. It was looking at bare rocks or bare Eel's Cliffs. It was bare. It didn't seem to get much rain.
Did you get off at Portishead when it stopped?
No.
There? So we never got off the boat at all?
No.
You said that there were married families on the boat, and officers, of course. Were they strictly kept away from
it? Oh, yes. Yes, they were kept in their areas, and we were kept in ours. And officers was kept... Officers normally would stop in their area, but you couldn't stop them from coming amongst the troops, but the troops couldn't go into their areas. Strict. That was strict, the same as in barracks or cantonments. You know, in barracks in Britain in those days, and we're talking of 60 years ago, if a sergeant was married, or any soldier was married, they would live invariably in married quarters. But single soldiers couldn't go there, not unless they were on a duty, and they would be supervised by an NCO. And that would be normally coal, taking coal to the when they got the ration of coal for the married quarters. But that would be the only time you would ever get anywhere within the married quarters. You were always kept separate.
Did you have religious gatherings on the boat?
Might have done, I can't remember that
Sundays.
Very well. Well, you know, being a Wesleyan, there was very few of us anywhere. We were always classes of the denominations, and there was very few of us.
You didn't have a service of your
own? So we didn't get a service. The others, the Catholics and the Protestants, may have had their services, but I just wouldn't know, because it wasn't in my faith.
You mentioned breakfast. Lunch, what time of the day would lunch be?
Be about 12. Usually stuck strict to the routines of the army. Usually 8 o'clock for breakfast, 12.
Was this a cafeteria system that for your food? You lined up with your plates and what have you?
To come to think of it, I'm not sure. It may have been issued onto those tables, and the senior NCO on the end of the table would be, the senior soldier or NCO would say that there was strict rationing out. Everybody would get the equals, or as near as equal as could be possibly done.
Then you would have tea. About what time would that be?
4 o'clock, 4:30.
Had you any access to drinks between the meals? Sorry.
You might have had soft drinks from the canteen, but that I just can't remember. There would be water.
When you got to the really hot climates and sweating, was there any attempt to give you more drinks on a basis of you not necessarily having to go and pay for them? Drinks, I think?
That I cannot remember. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Not going, no.
After tea, was there a supper?
No. Once you had the last meal, it was the last meal. But the canteen would be open. The canteen would maybe open, say, about 6 o'clock till maybe 9 or 10. And it would be the ship's canteen, so it was limited what they could carry.
Was that run by the Army or by the Navy, the Merchant Navy?
It was run by NAFI, the Navy, Army, Air Force Institute. I'm pretty sure that's what it would be run by. It wouldn't be run by civilians.
What time was lights out on the boat?
10 o'clock, quarter past 10, I think. I think they stuck to military regulations. Last post, 10 o'clock, lights out, quarter past. Reveille, 6 o'clock.
Would these be by bugle?
I'm not certain about that, but I think it might have been. I think there might have been a ship's bugler. He may be on the permanent staff. I think so. I couldn't be clear on that, so I couldn't answer it. I couldn't give a truthful answer to that.
Did the food change in any way as you got into really hot climates?
No, we had almost the same. We had almost the same kind of food all the way.
Fruit? Was the fruit plentiful?
Not unless you bought it when the ship stopped. If you, and then you were warned not to, because buying fruit from the natives anywhere, you could nearly guarantee on dysentery.
Did they come out to the boat?
They would come out of the boat, in little boats. And not only that, you had the youngsters who would dive. You would throw coins into the sea. They would dive down and pick the coins up before they hit the bottom. That was the entertainment we had at both the ports we stopped at. It was always surrounded by a number of these youngsters who were like fish.
It would be a way of life you'd never seen before.
Oh, aye, everything. Everything was different. But you see, you didn't get off the ship to mix, to find out their way of life. You only got it when you got to where you were going to. You had to really be in that particular area to know how they were living. And you know, I know the lads used to curse them red, white and blue, but I sometimes always felt a bit sorry for them. But you know, they would take your eyes out. If you give them an inch, they'd take a mile. They were so dishonest. You very rarely find anybody honest. Mind, the troops weren't always honest either. There was this black sheep there as well. But whether it was handed down from history or not, Lord only knows, because I couldn't answer that question. Not with my experience. I know when I was in India, it could have been different, but on the ship and making towards India, when we were a lot of miles away from India, we knew we were near the land. We couldn't see it, but we knew. We could smell it. There is an overpowering smell in the Indian Ocean as you're approaching the Indian continent. It's there. I cannot give you an indication now what it was like, because it's so long ago. But when you were on the ship, you knew from the sea air to the changed odours coming from the Indian continent.
And were they pleasant or unpleasant?
I wouldn't say they were pleasant or unpleasant. They were just there. You knew. You knew you were approaching a new area. And it must have been solid for the smell to be, the odour rather than it was. Now, when we came from the Atlantic into the Mediterranean, we never had that. And we never had it through the Mediterranean, through the canal, and through the Red Sea, or even the Indian Ocean, until we were just so far from India. And then it hit you. You knew then that there was going to be a change.
This brings us to reaching India. What date did you arrive in India?
Oh, I couldn't say what date we arrived. About 3 weeks after we left Southampton.
And this was what year?
33. Be either October or November when we arrived.
What were your first impressions of India?
I think if I say starstruck would be about it. We were, you see, when the ship docked, it went by the quayside, and we were told to get off, we went into big sheds where we were issued with our bedding. And that was your permanent bedding. From once you got it, you went into India, you had a large blue rug, which they called a duri. Now that's what you wrapped your blankets and whatever it is, wherever you went from the rest of the time you were in India. They gave you a cord, and you had your bed plate, which you were issued when you first joined the army. You had a brass bed plate with a ring in it, a hole in it, and that you put to onto your cord, and that was yours. Number, rank, name, regiment, bust was on, and you took that wherever you went until you finished.
And you were issued with your bedding on arrival at the port?
At the port, yes.
And had to carry that to wherever you were going?
You would get transport. Now, near the sheds, they brought the train that night. I think it was night time. It was either... I can't quite be honest about this, but I know we were on the train for 5 days, but three all nights. That was like day, three nights, and a day at the end, with the three full days in between. But that train stopped at various places on the route from Bombay to Barrackpore, which is 17 miles from Calcutta. Now, the fast expresses used to do that journey in 36 hours. That was the, you know, the civilian and the mail carrier and the high class people. They used to travel on that. I think it used to run about once a day or once or so often.
And so your first views of India would be out of a train window.
Yeah, all of it.
What was happening? What were you seeing?
Just the countryside and people. Doing the work in the fields, the paddy fields, or...
Was it as you expected from your own learning?
No. We were surprised at many of the things which we saw. The high grass, which was called elephant grass, was much higher than we have ever had in this country. And then, you know, you had your palm trees, your coconut palms and your banana palms. You would see them... you would see the natives, where we have sweeping brushes, they would have a bunch of twigs and they would sweep the roads or the paths with like a bunch of twigs without any handle. They would be tied up with a piece of twine or vine or whatever it is they had, but they were just like the end of a witch's broom, you know, but no handle. And they were the sweeping around. Now, you sometimes, in the larger areas where you're passing through, you would see that invariably the men, some of the men, carrying the beds around. Now, the beds were called charpoys. And they would be made of bamboo, very light. But they would have rope across for to lie on. Now, they'd just put the rope, you know, in the centre and carry them around. And nearly all the women which carried anything was all carried on the heads. They used to wrap the babies, those who had babies would wrap them around the backs and tie up somehow so the baby's neck was, head was just shoving over one of the shoulders, and they would carry most things on the heads. That was another thing we saw, where the women... And that was in, by the way, when we were passing through the canal, I forgot to mention it, where the male would be riding a donkey or an ass, the woman would be either following or in front, carrying whatever it was in a basket on her head. We were astonished at seeing that.
You should cause some comments.
Oh, aye. The lad used to say, get off it and give the lass a ride, you know. Oh, aye.
From your own background, were you struck by the poverty?
Oh, yes. It was poor. They were poor. They would come and they would ask, have you got any old clothing to give away? They were usually the people who worked within the followers. They were the people employed by the army for to keep places tidy. You know, the white men didn't do various jobs. They employed the natives. And those natives, from time to time, they would say, Saab, have you got to point to a shirt or any old shirts, any old trousers or anything? And they would use them.
Did this surprise you?
Yes.
That working for the army, they were so obviously badly paid.
Well, there comes the point. Now, I'm not quite sure whether they were employed by the army or whether they were employed by the army's civilian contractor. You see, we didn't have nappies. in India. We are private contractors, and our contractor had the name of Shamsuddin. Now he run the canteen, and he run all the people in the canteen. So I would believe that he would be responsible for the followers.